you started working for the National Trust as a warden, is that right?
17, 18 years ago, on Snowdon. The acquisition of the Snowdon farm created a job, because I knew the job of a warden was what they call a dead men's shoes job. You have to wait for people to pass on. But luckily, the trust, through big public appeal, bought the Snowdon farm, and therefore it created an opening, which I sort of filled.
And what were you doing before that?
I'd gone to university quite a bit later, and I got the job before I finished my degree, which is in environmental planning and management. And then before that, it was Heinz 57, all varieties of jobs, from education officer on Bardsey Island in the Irish Sea, through to selling cars, through to managing hotels and everything else in between, until I got the job I wanted when I was 11 years old, which is as a warden on Snowdon. But be careful when wishing for stuff and getting it. It'll never meet your reality. Walking up and down the same path isn't as exciting as you think it is.
So the expectations didn't actually realise themselves with that. So what happened then?
Well, the job just got bigger and bigger and bigger, which I quite enjoyed, because I then became the head warden of a part of Snowdonia. I then got seconded a little bit for project development. I eventually ended up being the countryside manager for Snowdonia and Llyn, and then the trust developed a new roles in the regions called environmental practice advisor. I applied for it, and the thing that really clinched it for me was I set a challenge back to the interview panel. I said, right, it's 6 months into the job. If Keith Jones gets this job, what does Keith Jones do on a Monday morning, 6 months in? And the answer I got was they didn't know, which was perfect for me. I prefer blank pieces of paper and then coming up with a solution rather than trying to figure out what the author of a piece of paper's writing was actually thinking and having to figure it out.
So at that time, when was that?
That was 9 years ago now.
What was the energy? What did the energy landscape look like then?
Oh, completely different. It was all centralised and it was all distributed. And what really got me into this area was I'm a sort of hopeful cynic at heart. And when people say things, but when you look at the thing that they do, it isn't the same. So what really hit home to me was the development of one of the first borehole ground source heat pumps I was involved in a place just outside Bethgelert. And I noticed that everybody was making everything up and we were paying them a lot of money to learn. And I thought, right, they should be paying us for this privilege because we've got the sites to do it. And I've been cynical of experts ever since. There are a lot of very good experts out there who I've worked with now for a good 10 years, but there are an awful lot of charlatans out there as well. And if you don't know what to ask for, they'll deliver the thing that you don't need.
And so how did you go about developing the Trust's renewable energy programme in Wales?
Well, before that, the Trust had set itself a national energy reduction target, but it was built on slightly flawed data. And therefore, one of the first things I did, because it transitioned quite well from the work I'd done at a property, was to develop the first environmental management system for the trust, to trust the data. Before you say something will do something, if you're starting from a precarious place, it can never prove, because there's too much wiggle room inside it. So the environmental management system that we developed in Wales has now been adopted by the rest of the organisation. We've gone beyond that now. We've dealt with the quick wins. We're now into the structural, strategic bits of, well, one of our greatest impacts, for example, are our visitors. How do we help them? So that's spurned the new electric vehicle charging network that we've sprung up in every property in Wales now. So the renewables came off the back of energy efficiency gains, trusted data, and then it was relatively straightforward to do stuff. And it predates the big push by quite a few years. because it took time to share the lessons across the trust. The biggest project we did to start with, which was about £1 million worth of PV that we've installed across. We did all the properties, well, most of the big properties across in Wales, but we did the whole thing in 8.5 weeks. We were just under budget, we were ahead of time, so that also gave trust to go up to another level, which was the Snowdon Hydro. Again, the trust isn't really in the place because it was dealing with restructures and all sorts of stuff. So we got approval, which wasn't an easy thing, because we're then into, on the Snowdon Hydro, we're into industrial scale, which the trust had never done before in it. But we delivered ahead of budget, I think about a month behind because of various weathers and bits and bobs. But it's still running, it's developing. I think that was the main catalyst, because it's all around trust within the National Trust. Can you trust us to do stuff? And will that stuff do what you said it would do right at the beginning? And to date, we've had a couple of projects where what we call the scope changed because of we're heating twice as much and all sorts of other bits and bobs have happened. But to date, where we've got some really good projects out there, which is still accelerating. My work sort of, my job is to start things off. Kick, pump prime, get trust, get approval. And the seagulls are a bloody nuisance. But, so I'm now, I don't lead on hydro, I don't lead on renewable energy development. I've moved across now into how do we add value to the thing. We make a raw product at the moment, which is electricity, which is exported to the grid. Somebody else adds value and takes most of the profit from this. So this is the next area of work, and the Bethesda trial of the energy local is one example. We're doing a lot more than just the Bethesda trial. We're trying to also create an internal market within the trust for supply. We're also dabbling with what's called in-day trading. We're trying to sell out to suppliers every day rather than once a year, because it's more luck once a year. Whatever the price was on that day, that sort of pegs the price for the rest of the year. But we're using technology and advanced metering to do that. That's the area that sort of delights me at the moment, because it doesn't fit comfortably with a non-utility company. It doesn't, because it's usually one of the big six or one of the big energy suppliers. Well, we can become our own energy supplier eventually by having better data, better monitoring, and better management.
So you mentioned Bethesda as a project. Can you talk a little bit more about what that pilot is about?
Well, the Bethesda trial comes about. I've been looking now for 8 years to supplying electricity that we generate by borrowing the grid, because the white cabling's already there. It's just, how do we pay for it? How do you do the settlement? And I heard of a project that was happening down in the southeast of England, and it had stalled a little bit, but it seemed to have some of the answers to what we were looking at. So we invited them up. We said the trust is also building a hydro within a community. The community in Bethesda is a really strong community with a good track record of delivery, and its time was right. We had the right people in the right place. It's still a pilot, because the technology is okay-ish. The billing is a bit hit and miss, but at least we've proved the concept that you can supply locally from local generation. But I reckon we've got another 6 months to go before we've got a finished product in Bethesda. So I've been involved in the setup and the approval and getting some funding in through government and this, that and the other, but the thing's running by itself now. We're looking to set up another one, because the other branch I haven't spoken about is what I do when I don't get paid, which is of an evening. So I'm now the founder of 4 community energy companies. From Abergwyn Gregin, they've been running now for a year and a half. Bethesda, were the other project in Bethesda is Ynniogwen, which is a wholly owned community hydro that I identified, we worked with, and we've had an awful lot of National Trust staff volunteer their time to develop this project. Then there's another one in Llanberis that was switched on about 6 weeks ago as well. Well, we officially switched both of them on last Saturday. We had an MP in one and an assembly member in the other, and switched both on at 11:30 in the morning. So we're in discussions now. We've got a few other projects now which are starting to come to the fore, because we were focusing on getting these ready and generating. And I suppose the bit I'm dealing with at the moment, which is the biggest headache, is the huge jump in business rates. In essence, the Bethesda Hydro has gone from a profitable, or shall we say, a project that does surpluses for the community, to something that makes no money. All the income now, net profit now, goes to the government with business rates. So that can't be right. So I'm doing quite a lot of lobbying at government and ministerial level, and everybody seems to want to fix it, but we need somebody to move on it. And at the moment, it's not happening, but I can see light at the end of the tunnel after about 4 months of work on this.
Where does your interest and your passion for this and that inner side and outside work, and presumably at home as well, of you know, looking at and ways to change energy use?
I think it's because it to me it feels like a new frontier, and therefore whatever solutions you come up with are fairly new, and I quite like new. Isn't always, even though I work for a heritage organization, a new solution to an old problem, there's always been new. I quote often, there's a 15th century Hall House. It's a holiday cottage down in Mid Wales. And I said, well, what if we told you the latest technology had just been bolted onto this for heating? I'm not sure if you're aware of the technology. It's called a chimney. It was retrofitted onto the cottage in 1522. That was 100 years after it had been built. Been interesting to see if we'd have got planning permission on it now. But I like new thinking or transferable skills. And I suppose what delights me, as in what, is having fun. Paul, a mate of mine, and I, we every December we go for a coffee and we do a fun audit of the previous year. And a couple of years ago, it wasn't at a high enough level, so we had to change something. We had to talk to people. We had to make things clearer on it. So as long, because I work, it's an interesting sector. Because especially the community energy sector, I hardly come across any negativity in there. There's exasperation, there's fury, but negativity is quite rare in this area, which, moving from work to outside, is an interesting one, where there's conflicting asks on resources in work. And therefore, is it more important than the scone, than the cream cake, than the Rembrandt, than the tapestry? Whereas with a community, it's a solution to a problem. We haven't got resources to be sustainable for the future. Here's one option. It's worked before. Here are the ingredients that you need to make this solution. I'll stay with you until the thing works. And the National Trust Community Hydro, sorry, the National Trust Hydro, which is the Bethen Hydro, which is applying Bethesda, the project manager came to see me to say, I've just had something completely unique. I've had people from the community come to thank us for building this thing because they can see benefit from it, which I really liked. That adds to my fun quotient, basically.
And does it, do you think, engaging with these things leads to people's behavioural change, and has it done with you?
I'm still absent-minded when it comes to leaving the light on, but I have completely externally insulated my house. I've triple glazed my house. I've PV'd it. I've done all sorts of stuff. I've just spent the last 3 weeks making a clay earth oven to the exasperation of my family, but it works. But I like doing stuff itself. But the house itself really doesn't it's an old mill house, and Storm Desmond hit it, so I've used it a few times in presentations now. I can have the most environmentally friendly house in the world, but the environment isn't friendly to my house, and therefore we need to I'm doing the mitigation. I now need to do the adaptation, which is dealing with the impacts of the stuff that we're already seeing. So that in work, that's my next area of exploration, should we say. How do we adapt to the change that's here now? It's just accelerating. The change is already here.
Are you seeing that change, witnessing it in North Wales?
Yes, in terms of the seasons are earlier, the storms are bigger. Well, I wouldn't say the storms are bigger, the frequency, because there's always been storms. But every time you go into autumn, you know it's bad when you're running out of letters in the alphabet to name these things. So we know change is here. We know the relative humidity from inside some of the houses is going up and up. We know that we're getting bigger lumps of rain, which means that the gutters can't cope. And these are, some of them are medieval gutters, but they can't cope. So we know, because if that level of rainfall had been when they designed it, the gutters would have been bigger, as an example.
And places like cathedrals who are experiencing this, they have the records going back that show the levels of...
We're having to do it with castles and all sorts of stuff. So that's my new frontier at the moment. But I can't leave the energy side of it because of... I've just had funding now via one of the community energy companies to take on a full-time PhD student to employ them to look at benefit beyond cash. What does it do to a community's confidence? Because if you can build one, you can build other stuff. It doesn't have to be energy. It also gets us to talk because we have a common thread running between us, which spurns other stuff to come out. But we have no empirical data on this. So we've taken on a social scientist now to work with us for 3 years so we can prove value that's not pounds, shillings and pence. Does it lower on the social side on impact? There's a lot. So in Wales, we're unique. We've got this Future Generations Bill, which is... when you do something, you have to have a view of what the next generation have to pick up. What's the whole life cost? What's the benefit of doing something? Does community hydro help future generations? There are measures that we can measure against, and that's what this person will be doing. So it's an interesting place at the moment, but I'm trying to evidence this place. Before you ask for money, you need to show impact. What's impact?
And do you have any personal evidence, anecdotal evidence of these impacts?
Well, I've been in the same house now for 20 years, and we've always had flood because it's an old mill. There's a socking great big leat that runs underneath the house, and I only had 1 centimetre spare before I got inundated, which means that the road has to have had 2 metres of water in it. This is the main road into the village in order for it to get near my house. So I'm not sure that the house would have been built in a place that got that level of inundation. My PV, one of my panels got destroyed as well by Storm Desmond. It must have vibrated loose and it really got mushed in there. Then you think, what's the impact going to be in future infrastructure? Are we building this stuff to deal with what's coming? Because one storm every 10 years is fine, but a 10-year storm every year, that's the problem that we're facing at the moment.
You're talking about communities and the social cohesion that maybe this can bring. Have you found have you found evidence of that? And also, have you seen communities' engagement with energy and hydro generation as something that they've embraced more over the years?
I think it's a matter of ownership. So the Llanberis Community Hydro came about because of a tirade in the local paper by a person who I emailed him to have a chat with him, and it was all around benefit and ownership. So there's a big pump storage system that's going in. It's 100,000 kilowatts in size, and it pays the same amount to a community fund as something that's only 50 kilowatts but owned by the community, and 100% of the net surplus goes to the community. If they own and see value, renewables are easy to justify. You still have what I call a banana mentality, which is build absolutely nothing near anyone, but you always will in there. Most of the shares, so we raised £750,000 between the two hydros we raised all the capital we required. 90% of it was within 15 kilometres of the site. And this, in European terms, is an area of high multiple deprivation, very low GDP, which is why we get the money from Europe for infrastructure. So they funded it. We then ran a survey with them. Why did you buy into this? because we thought, because we were offering 5% interest rate, we thought because of what Mark Carney and the Bank of England were doing with savings, we thought that was, it wasn't, that was a very distant third. The main motivating factor was it was their community, it was their project. And then the second one was it was renewable energy. The third one was it, there's a return on investment. But it was by a factor of 10, the difference between the return on investment versus something in their community. We've had no detraction whatsoever. The moment you put the word community on it, because in theory, you'll have already spoken to everybody. The chats would have happened in the pubs, in the WI, in the everything else. Whereas a commercial developer, they have one customer, which is the shareholder. They don't have 1,000 customers as we do, who own stuff. Because we did the grand opening of the Llanberis one, and I thanked everybody who'd turned up because they were the shareholders. I said, you do realise you own this. This isn't mine. This isn't anybody else. You own it, which means that they're now hungry for the next one. We've already got a common language with them for looking at energy efficiency, for anything else that we want to do, because it's purely philanthropic. People are doing it for the right reasons rather than to pay the shareholder or the bank loan or the whatever off. So this is why the big six and everybody struggles on energy efficiency, because people don't trust them. That's the one thing that we have more than anything else, is trust. And as far as the National Trust is concerned, because we're sharing the specifications and the contracts and stuff that we've been using, we're now relevant to people that don't come to the mansions, that don't come, but they see that we're of value. And therefore, if you value something, you look after it. Not, I'm not talking of the mansions, I'm talking about the organisation, that's the National Trust.
You talked about the big six then. How is that sector react? How are they reacting to this, you know, these pilots that are going on, which could potentially seriously put a dent in their shareholders' profits?
I'm not sure it would, because we've been dealing with Scottish Power Networks, the DNO. They still get paid. They look after the cables. You still need the cables, no matter what happens. I think the big six are hungry for this, because they're seeing it almost as a get-out-of-jail card for them. Local supply, local benefit, local control. I mean, control of the electricity supply, and because there's too much, there's not enough. How do you manage that bit? The world of energy supply in 10 years will be unrecognizable from today, purely because of data, electronics and control systems. So they're all hungry for this. They've not got in the way at all. They've not lobbied against it. We've had complete Ofgem buy-in into this, because they're seeing it as the part of the future, because 109 houses in Bethesda isn't going to really going to create a debt in their dent in their profits, but it's the development of a new model that moves benefit, because energy supply is risky, because you're contracted to giving the customer a certain a time of electricity at a certain voltage for a certain price. If the supply market, as in the generators, aren't making it at that level, the bills are massive for the supplier, not for the customer. This is why it's usually only the big six that have got really deep pockets to fill this in. But the way that we're going with local energy supply and battery storage and pump storage and everything else, it'll be a different market in 10 years' time. This is why I'm quite like working in this for the trust at the moment. How can we become our own internal market for the stuff that we generate? We're selling at 5p, 5/6, but we're buying in for 12 to 14p. That can't. We know there are fixed costs, the cabling and everything else in there, but that can't be right if we're already making the product that we use. How do we move that raw product to a finished product that we can use? But it's the same with communities, which is what Bethesda is about. But technically at the moment, it's fairly early days, but it's an industry that's moving at such a pace. The other bit I quite like is electricity generation is completely disjoint from use. So who know? If you ask a bog standard person, what's a kilowatt hour? How much is a gigaton of carbon? It's a world full of jargon. But we can save you 60 quid by using the thing that you see at the end of the valley there, and we'll let you know in a format that you understand, and we'll help you with payment, and we'll help you with billing, and all of the profit stays in this valley. What's not to like? We'll cut your electricity supply by 30%, but we really want you to work with us. When it's raining, do stuff with electricity. At certain times of day, because we'll tell you the certain times of day, it'd be good if you use less, because it's the most expensive stuff. Then if you work with us there, we will help the grid, we'll help the supply market. When the sun's out, the PV is producing, or when it's raining, the hydro's producing, when it's windy, that sort of. But we're also working on the technology side of it, because we're creating something called a tariff signal, which is, look, it's 8p for the next half hour, do something with it. It's 14p, do less with it now. This is what the UK needs, is to balance this grid element out, because we're sizing everything to peak demand. We're having to build surplus capacity, which you have to pay for 8% of the day, where actually you need to pull the peak of that pyramid down in order that you either store it or use it, because there's talk of reverse charging from electric vehicles, fridge freezers with batteries, and all sorts of stuff coming through at the moment. But at the domestic market, it's not ready to take the tariff signal, because they automatically assume it's a bit mushy, and therefore you overpay for stuff just in case there's not enough or there's too much or whatever it is. So that's a real exciting area, I think. The other bit I keep being asked about is what degree I need to do for on renewable energy and efficiency. And the one pinch point in this whole thing is lawyers and accountants. It's not renewable engineers. There's plenty of them at the moment, but it's the legal frameworks and stuff that stop stuff from happening or make stuff really expensive and slow stuff down. So that's an area that needs exploring properly, because we're paying fortunes out for what's called due diligence. And then one company won't take another company's due diligence, so you have to spend it twice. And it just gets worse and worse and worse. Asking a lawyer if you need a lawyer is a little bit of a silly question.
The trust is, I would say, trailblazing, but certainly, you know, wholly bought into renewable energy. You talked a bit about what's been happening in Wales and what you've been doing here nationally across Wales, England, and over in Northern Ireland as well. What level of engagement has the trust had with renewable energy?
Really good. But basically, the north, or the Cumbrian area, Northern Ireland's been doing really good work. Cumbria, the southwest is coming up to speed. The Midlands is lagging behind a little bit, and the southeast has got a way to go. But the reason the southeast got a way to go is just because the volume it's got. It's got five times more mansions than we have over in Wales, so it's quite a significant jump for them. We've been going for the lowest hanging fruit to start, which every company should do. Why aren't you doing hydros where it's wet and steep? Why aren't you doing mansions where you can get lorry deliveries easier? So we're churning through those at the moment. But we know it can be done, because in Wales, 60% of our heat used to come from oil. The last major site on oil came off just before Christmas. That was 6 years of work. It was Penryn Castle, around the corner, the second largest mansion the Trust has got. But if we can do it there, I think we can do it anywhere. Because it used to have five completely separate boiler houses, oil. This is up to 8 months ago. So we know it can be done, but it's a matter of prioritisation. The biggest measure of success, I've said, it, with anything new, is try to make yourself useless. Because it means that you've sold the idea. People then don't come to you because they do it automatically. We were calling it the mini-me programme. And the letter state is accelerating in Wales now as well, moving away from oil heating systems over specifically to heat pump more than anything else. So I know the Trust is committed to it. Sometimes it struggles with the with prioritisation, because we're not an energy company. We never should be an energy company. We're a heritage organisation. So we stick to heritage, and everything else supports heritage, rather than the other way around, that heritage supports energy. So I don't think that we should be doing everything everywhere, but we should be doing the right things in the right place. That sounds party political, I know, but it is true. because you wouldn't focus any time looking at hydros in Cambridgeshire, would you? But if you're using 100,000 litres of oil, yeah, you should be looking at what alternatives have I got. Because I'm still a fan of insulating better, managing better. Because I've used the examples before where you can have a completely carbon neutral oil boiler. Just switch it off. That's it. Simple. Use it less. And that doesn't cost that much money to do. We're still wasting energy, but so is everybody in the world at the moment. Because I used to say that energy is too cheap. The reason I know it's too cheap is because we're wasting it. You don't value something that you value. You don't waste something that you value. At the moment, it's still too cheap on it. I know it doesn't do any good to fuel poverty and everything else that comes out of it. But when, as happened 5 or 6 years ago, there's a big hike in oil prices, hit $150 a barrel. My phone didn't stop going because people wanted to do something about it. The moment it dropped below 50, we can do something else for now.
The Trust nationally has got 6 million members, I think.
Five.
Okay.
What's a million between friends?
Still an impressive number, but how is this more, so you could say, conservative with a small C, centre-right audience that you have?
I think the argument has been won there, because I was involved in a few of the annual general meetings, and the
Trust general meetings.
Yes, I haven't been involved in a few years now because the question hasn't really raised. But for 2 years running or 3 years running, three questions can come from the floor, and they have to. And two out of those three questions for 3 years running were about renewables and about environmental management, and purely on the positive side. They were trying to hold the Trust to account. Why aren't you? Not why are you? So I think the membership is that you'll always have the banana build absolutely nothing mentality. That's just life in there. Change nothing. It's always been perfect, or it's always been worth complaining about. But I think the general consensus is we're looking after the heritage by being frugal through energy efficiency, but also de-risking it with moving away from fossil fuels, and also mitigating that, because we have declared our standpoint on climate change, and this is part of that, the mitigation side of it.
I mean, if you go back a generation, there was a lot of mining going on in this part of the world. Going forward a generation, we've talked 10 years into the future, but maybe a little bit further. What is your energy vision?
Because people say, nuclear fission isn't that far. Fusion isn't that far away. I hope it never gets invented, because the amount of resources we'll then be able to exploit because of very cheap energy will destroy this thing, this world that we live on. So I'm hoping that we never discover cheap energy, because the amount of resources that we could then use in the world by going to the Arctic and going to everywhere else would be catastrophic. It's the cost of stuff that stops us from utilising stuff. And if energy is 40-50% of your bill, then all of a sudden the seabed isn't that far away, well, thousands of metres, but if the energy's free for manufacturing the stuff to go there, you see where I'm going? So that, I hope we never get there. But in 20-30 years' time, we will have a fully integrated big data world, where the shame of it is it'll be a lot more autonomous. Cars will be self-driving, because that's the most efficient, effective way of dealing with it. But cars will be integrated to your house energy supply for taking the peak off stuff, or moving power around the country level. I'm going on holiday to France this summer. I'm going to see, they've made a 1 kilometre highway in northern France, and it's completely made of PV. So you're not losing agricultural land, but I'm not sure how effective it is. Then if you combine that with the stuff that Panasonic's been doing with inductive charging of vehicles, so they don't need to plug in, it works by induction. So interesting if you could charge up whilst you're driving. So that, I haven't got a clue. My wife works in careers for 25 years. When I met her first, she said in 20 years' time, you can't even from 20 years ago, you can't even imagine the jobs that are going to be. So a friend of mine works on fall arrest harnesses for ocean wind turbines. So it'd be an interesting career short talk 20 years ago if you were looking at fall arrest systems on ocean wind turbines. They've just done floating, they're building floating wind farm now up in Scotland, so I haven't got a clue where the world is going, but data will be king in everything that we do. I think it'll be a less private world, but it'll be a more efficient and effective world, because by then we'll have 9 billion people on the planet, easy, on it. So we've got the resources for quite a few billion more if we use them effectively and efficiently. But we'll be running out of space in popular countries like this, with or without people coming in, because we still breed.
Just finally on government regulation and engagement with renewables since the 9 or 10 years that you've been working there. How has that changed over that period of time?
There's an acceptance that we have a low carbon future. That's good. My only concern is it's too much of a political football. It's too Cinderella. It's boom and bust. The PV market 4 years ago was the example, perfect example of that. We created 75,000 jobs and then the whole industry, because it wasn't the support mechanisms weren't well regulated. But we know the boom's coming back, because I was reading on the wholesale price of PV is still plummeting at the moment. In India, has already reached what they call grid parity. Why would you take grid electricity when you can actually build it cheaper yourself? This is coming. It's a year or two away, and therefore the industry will start ramping up again. I have a concern about losing food production land to it, so I've been putting projects forward to using highway verges or airfield perimeters or that sort of thing, where we've got land that needs to be managed, but not for food production, not for anything else. So there's that to be looked at. Efficiency is going up and up. So a PV panel 5 years ago was 14-15% efficient. They're now 22-23% efficient. So we'll get more from less from doing that. But the government are not very good at playing in the market. If they're going to regulate, they should regulate and stick to it, but have a mechanism for dealing with unintended consequences, because the market's cleverer. There's more people in the market than there are in policy. This latest business rates debacle was an unintended consequence of trying to raise more revenue, and the way that they interpreted it has hit hydro, because they assume that 60% of the capital cost is borne by the land owner and not by the tenant, which means that we pay three times more business rates on hydro than we do on PV, on the equivalent output of PV. So there needs to be some form of way of dealing with this, rather than having to react and having to do discretionary this, that and the other in there. But because we're in a social media world, and because we can embarrass people instantaneously on media that goes viral, I don't think the politicians are going to change. The framework that they sit in may change, as in, look, don't play with that stuff. It doesn't really need regulating. Play with this stuff around the social and dealing with the victims of the open market, being those at the periphery, the fuel poor, that sort of element. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. This latest capping thing, it's just political. They don't even know what it means, and therefore the impact on investment onto everything else is unknown, and therefore why would you invest on an unreliable market, because you don't know what's going to happen.